Taking Stock with Pim Fox.
I could escape this feeling with my China girl. I feel a wreck without my little China girl.
Time to wish your China girl a happy Valentine's Day, I suppose so. At the very least, we can figure out what's going on with our China girl and our China boy and our China everything here on Taking Stock on Bloomberg. I'm Dave Wilson, along with Pim Fox, and here to talk about China and actually other emerging markets too, but China is, of course, the biggest one out there. We have Michael Yoshikami. He's the president and chief investment strategist at YCM Net Advisors. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dave.
So, all right, let's talk about emerging markets in the context of China. You see what's happened. Last week, MSCI Emerging Market Index taking its biggest hit since July, down 3.4%. It's bounced back today. A lot of that driven by what's happened in the Middle East. And then you get people talking about, well, you've got to be more selective now with emerging markets. You can't just buy them as a group. So how does all this come into play when you talk about China?
Well, first of all, I think we need to look at China in terms of how emerging is this really as an emerging market. As you probably have heard, as was reported today, China exceeded Japan's economy. So we have to say, when an economy is that large, is it really an emerging economy? I think it's a fast-growing economy, but I think China really is a different case than maybe some other economies. Countries like Thailand or Indonesia or Malaysia. So I think you have to look at it from a life cycle perspective. I think China's pretty far along in terms of emerging, and I think that it certainly should be part of an investment strategy. Even though you have difficult news coming out of China with what's happening with real estate and interest rates tightening, it still is a very, very high growth market. I don't think you can avoid that if you're looking for diversified returns across the globe.
All right, Michael, so if you can't avoid dealing with China, is there a safe way to do this? I mean, come on. You know, I read the details of these Chinese companies, and then out of the blue, you know, of course, you're going to get some headline that says, wait a minute, all those reverse mergers that took place, we got to go and investigate those because we're not exactly sure about the financials there. We're not exactly sure about the connections between a lot of Chinese companies and local municipalities, or indeed even the People's Army, which is, you know, a pretty big element in the economy. Is there a way for an American investor on their own to participate without subjecting themselves to the risks that you might have by, you know, dealing with companies whose language you don't speak? You're never really going to get to visit them, and you're not going to be able to touch and feel their products.
That's a great point you make, Pim. I think really investors get caught up oftentimes in trying to find that one stock, that one Chinese internet stock that's going to go through the roof.
Because, you know, every day you look at them and you go, how come I didn't grab that one? It was up 68%. I could retire for the rest of the year, but it never happens.
Yeah, well, you know, those are very, very rare situations. I can tell you, if you go to Las Vegas, somebody won $1 million, but most people didn't. So I think when you're investing in China, when you're investing in emerging markets, and I think you correctly point out, in a country where people will, where if in all likelihood people will never visit the company, you don't know what the accounting rules look like. We have all of these conflict of interest. I think you have to play a macro. And I think the way you play the macro is you buy an ETF. For example, in China, there's an ETF for Hong Kong. There's an ETF for Shanghai. Hong Kong is a little more financial services, real estate oriented. Shanghai is a little bit more investing directly in the Chinese economy. I think that's the safer way to go. Now, it doesn't
mean do you think Hong Kong or do you think Shanghai?
I think it depends on what you're looking to invest in. If you're looking for more established companies, then you probably go Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Hong Kong has a longer track record in terms of its business activities as opposed to Shanghai. But I think Shanghai, frankly, is a way to really actually invest more in what people perceive China to be, which is a growing economic power. Hong Kong is really a financial services play in some respects.
Well, what about some of the solar stocks? I mean, you know, I was speaking earlier to a fund manager. He manages a fund in Germany, and he's been knocking the cover off the ball by investing in a lot of these Chinese companies that are focused on not only the domestic market for solar power, but they are trying to be export leaders. You know, they got low-cost production.
Yeah, you know, I actually know a number of senior executives of solar companies here. It's a space we cover. Yeah, they're in the news. But again, this is a very, very competitive market. I don't know that I would be really chasing individual solar companies. Again, that's the kind of technology that is really fraught with uncertainty, not only the technology itself in terms of the sector, but also the fact that it's in China. So I don't know that I'd be chasing as an individual investor with any significant portion of your net worth stocks in the solar market in China.
All right, we're going to continue the conversation with Michael Yoshikami of YCM Net Advisors. He's joining us from that financial capital of the world, Walnut Creek, California. Actually, I'm going to find out from Michael Dave Wilson. I want to know if being out in California gives you a different perspective, because I know when I was there, the world is a different place depending upon where you sit.
Sure it is. All I can think of is the New York Stock Exchange opens at 6:30 a.m. Pacific time. That would give me a different perspective right off the bat. And clearly, there's more to it than that, though. And we'll find out from Michael Yoshikami on Taking Stock.
Yes, on a winter's day, we're dreaming of California. Why? Because we have Michael Yoshikami of YCM Net Advisors joining us from that financial hub, Walnut Creek, California. Michael Yoshikami, do you get a different perspective from being in California, particularly in the Bay Area? I know that, you know, Walnut Creek is one of those sort of suburbs that has now grown into a major population area in the East Bay. Do you get a different perspective, not only in terms of sort of your understanding of the world, but the kinds of questions, the kinds of concerns that your clients come to you with?
Yes, we do, actually. First of all, for those who don't know, Walnut Creek is about 20 miles to the east of San Francisco, and it's about 40 miles away from Silicon Valley. So I think really being in California, and particularly where we're at right now, we have the opportunity to speak with those who are very much on the cutting edge of what's happening in technology, and in a lot of ways, really the leading edge of thinking in terms of where things are headed globally in things like wireless and computers and cell phones. So it creates, I think, really a great opportunity for us to find out what really is actually happening in the marketplace above and beyond just press releases and company earnings reports.
Is there also perhaps sort of an international influence, I mean, given the makeup of the population in the area?
Yeah, you know, we actually have clients all over the world, and part of the reason for that is that many of our clients are from all over the world, whether it be from the Middle East, from Europe, India, China, Taiwan, Japan. We have clients all over the world.
Even Oakland, I bet. Even Oakland, California.
Yeah, we even actually crossed the tunnel.
The Caldecott Tunnel. Wow, you even go a little bit west. I love that, Michael.
Exactly. We go 5 miles and we go 5,000 miles.
All right, but having said that, the reason I want to ask you about California is you've got to be a little bit concerned about home base. I mean, take a look at, you've got the new governor, right, Jerry Brown, the old new governor, and some of the problems still exist. You've got unfunded pension liabilities. I read a report today about $63 billion. Those are just the retiree health costs. And, you know, you get up in the morning, you've got to go down up and down the 680 corridor. You're interested in what people are going to have to pay out in taxes and schools and things like that. How has that affected your own feeling about what the future holds?
Well, as far as California, I'm of the belief that really one of two things are going to happen. They're either going to cut services or they're going to raise taxes, and they'll probably do both. So this is a deficit that is just not going to go away, and it's going to get fixed. It's just people are just going to have to get used to less services is really what it comes down to. But there is a sense, I think, of in California of gloom about what's happening in terms of the budget. There still is tremendous unemployment in the state of California. Hiring has not bounced back here. This is one of the places in the country that, while the recession officially is over, according to the numbers, people still feel the recession very, very strongly here. So it is a bit sobering, and I think it really impacts our view of the investment world, and that we actually believe the entire country is in some ways similar to what's happening in California, where there's too much debt, there's high unemployment, and below the surface of euphoria that we're seeing with the markets rallying to 35-month highs, there's still underlying problems that really in the end have to be addressed.
And then beyond that, I mean, with the scenario you laid out, I can't help thinking that from your perspective, emerging markets have to look better than California or the rest of the U.S. now.
Well, frankly, that's why we are a global investor, and we've continued to focus on global overseas assets. We not only have emerging market investments directly, but even our U.S. companies. You know, Dave, our U.S. companies, 50% of the revenue from the companies we buy that are U.S. stocks derive the revenue comes from outside of the United States. So again, back to the emerging markets theme, I think it makes sense very simply to go where the growth is. You have to be cautious and conservative. And one of the ways you can be cautious and conservative, besides buying ETFs, as we talked about earlier, is to buy global companies. Companies like McDonald's, for example, that derive a significant percentage of their revenues overseas. You can not only peel dividends off of these stocks, companies like IBM, but you also, more growth-oriented companies like IBM, you also have the opportunity of participating in emerging market growth with while having still more transparency than if you were buying a local company.
All right, Michael, here's the challenge round for you. What can you give us? What was your best and what was your worst investment of last year?
Best investment last year probably was Singapore.
Okay.
That did very well for us. I don't know the exact percentage off the top of my head, but it was high double digits. Worst investment probably was maybe Microsoft, which has been just kind of floating along.
You're still sticking with Microsoft? I mean, you got the Xbox 360 Kinect in the house?
No, my kids don't play the Xbox. But am I still sticking with Microsoft? Let's put it this way. We're looking at Microsoft.
All right. Well done. I want to thank you very much. Michael Yoshikami coming to us from YCM Net Advisors in Walnut Creek, California.
You can subscribe to Bloomberg's premium podcast service at Bloomberg.com/Tom Keene and listen to Taking Stock weekday afternoons at 3 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on satellite radio, Sirius Channel 130 and XM Channel 129. Copyright 2011, Bloomberg LP.